Okay, and we're going to take your phone calls now, so get ready. This is incredible material here. If that is indeed where Atlantis is, wow, I can't wait for us to go down there and just take a look at what some of those structures might be. Robert, what about the possibilities of some television documentaries?
Well, we just had one with the sci-fi channel Quest for Atlantis that aired about a month ago.
Was that all you?
No, they also did Dr. Greg Little's work off the coast of Bimini.
Right.
And a little bit about Antarctica. It was a pretty long 2-hour
documentary. Yeah, I'm talking about a complete documentary on one of your missions.
We want to do that with the next expedition, which is really the most important and most exciting one, because we've already done the legwork, so now we're just going to be looking under the mud and really bringing this to a finish, because if that's rock, which I think it is, then, you know, we don't need a sign saying Atlantis this way. If it's just piled rocks, that will finish it. It means it's man-made. It's 50 miles off coast. That's unprecedented. And a mile under. Well, how the hell did it get over there?
Well, and the big thing, too, is, of course, the entire so-called myth of Atlantis stemming from what Plato has written. There's no way, and I agree with you here, there's no way that this could have occurred way out in other regions of the Atlantic Ocean. And Plato would have heard about it. I'm not even sure mankind even traveled right around those periods out that far.
No, not like that. And certainly civilization, I mean, if you say that it's in the Atlantic or out Bimini or whatever, you're saying that these people were so advanced that, they could travel and conduct intercontinental wars and dominate another land all the way in the eastern Mediterranean. But also, you know, if this is where civilization started, where are its remains? Why did agriculture, reading and writing, architecture, religion, the story of these gods and goddesses, so-called, why are they here and not over there? Are you saying that they didn't leave a trace and then suddenly civilization displaced itself by 10,000 miles out of nowhere? You know, this is a time when people were living in mud huts in Western Europe. There was no civilization, much less the Atlantic and the coast of Florida. It just doesn't make sense. When you give it the DNA test, it has to be in this region where civilization started, where the story originated, where the Garden of Eden was supposed to be located, and where the earthquake took place.
And again, you believe they were jump-started by perhaps beings from another land, huh?
So, I personally do believe that yes. I mean, to put it matter-of-factly, yes, I do. And you know, if you study ancient history and comparative world mythology, you have to come to the conclusion that something extraordinary happened in distant times. You know, when mythologists like Joseph Campbell or Carl Jung studied this phenomenon, because this is the situation. You have civilizations as far as South America to Egypt, all the way to Tibet and China and so forth, and all the ancient civilizations in the Near East, the Persians, Mesopotamians, Egyptians, Greek, Anatolians, all of them come up with the same story about how civilization started. And they say that it started on this beautiful paradisical island where beings from the heavens came down, and of course it's in the Bible too, you know, came down and gave us the art of civilization. And they didn't just talk about this, you know, offhand. Their civilizations revolved around it. The kings and queens of these lands traced their bloodline back to these so-called gods. They fought wars in their name. They celebrated their New Year's, their Christmases, you know, their versions of them, about this story. This was their sacred scriptures. It dominated their lives and their civilizations. And this is from South America all the way to Egypt and further east. So when these mythologists study this phenomenon, they say, well, how could it be that, let's say, in South America, they were saying the same thing as they were saying in the Near East at a time when these people supposedly were not in communication. How could that be? And the conclusion that they come up with is that, well, if you isolate human beings wherever they are, they always come up with the same story, which is ludicrous. You're telling me that where if you put people all over the world and you leave them alone, they're always going to come up with that same story, that it's just something that pops out of their psyche automatically?
I don't think
so. That's the story. That's what they're saying.
Yeah, that's true, too. Now, how would you equate, and then we'll take some calls here, Robert, how would you equate the Sumerians, some of the work, for example, Zechariah Sitchin, where he, too, believes that we were visited, but he believes extraterrestrials came down into the summer area. Do you believe we may be talking about the same thing or two different episodes?
There were probably several episodes, and they probably went on for a good number of years. The ancient world talked about that ancient era as the golden age, when, quote-unquote, gods walked among men and taught men and civilized them, taught them to cook food, taught them sanitation, taught them how to read and write, taught them how to produce foods from the earth instead of having half their population starve to death every other year because of famine. This is what the entire ancient world taught matter-of-factly. And it's just something very wrong. You know, something went very wrong at some point, and their mission was aborted. And that's when they say the Dark Ages set in, which we're still in, according to the ancients. So there was this era in distant antiquity when, you know, they call it the Golden Age, when these gods walked among men and taught us how to live righteously, how to prosper, and how to love each other. And then that went wrong, and then suddenly we fell. That's in the Bible. That's in ancient mythology. That's in their history. It's everywhere. So, and then, of course, you have the scientific enigma of the missing link, where we don't know how we evolved suddenly from, you know, very primitive Neanderthals, and in the blink of an eye, suddenly we're splitting atoms. So when you put all these things together, and when you look at these ancient accounts, and when you know in our day and age, you know, about all these worlds out there, about the possibility of life forming, you know, there's billions of planets out there. Are you telling me that we're the only one? You know what the odds of that are? Very low.
I agree. Let's go to the phones. West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead. Where are you calling from?
I'm Delilah, and I'm from east and west of the Rockies and from around the world. I'm a truck driver here in the States.
You're everywhere.
And I'm originally from Bosnia. So you just said, George, recently that what if they would find pyramids there? That would be amazing, correct?
Yes.
Well, now I'm going to sound like Richard C. Hogan. Get ready, George. where I'm from, a little place, I'm from Sarajevo originally, but a little place 20 miles away from Sarajevo, it's called Visoko. They found a pyramid.
Oh, yeah, I know that.
Oh, you know about it?
Of course.
And you know what? It's like, you know how far away from Mediterranean it is? Like 100 miles.
Yep.
Not even that much. So all this might be connected to that. So it's crazy. So far they discovered it's made out of the blocks. So the entire time I thought it might be for the tourist thing, you know, but I guess not.
Well, let's ask you this, Robert. Egypt is a stone's throw, well, a long throw, from where this Atlantis region was. Is it possible that as it was sinking, those who did survive, and there must have been some, might have gone to Egypt and some of the other regions of the planet?
Well, not only is it possible, that's exactly what the Egyptians said. I mean, they told Solon, they told the Greeks that the civilizations and the arts that they have and the Greeks have descended directly from these superior people. I mean, they were quite matter-of-fact about it. All those pyramids, all the stories about the gods and goddesses, about the family that they grew, about the arts that they gave to humanity. The Egyptians said, you know, everything that you see here, Solon, all our antiquity, all these structures, all these pyramids, these are just remnants of that original civilization that the Greeks eventually called Atlantis.
Okay, next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing tonight?
Good, thanks.
I have two questions, once for you, because I never get on, but and once for your guest. First of all, I was wondering, I believe I might have had an abduction experience. And I was wondering if you knew anyone who does past regressions, you know?
Dr. Bruce Goldberg and Brian Weiss, if you go to my website, you can get their email addresses, if you would.
Okay.
On the left-hand side, just click show info and then guests.
Okay, and I have a question for your guest.
Sure.
About the Antarctic Atlantis. I was just wanting to know his take on it because I saw the pictures and, man, it looks pretty good as a site for the Atlantis.
Well, you know, the story of the Antarctic theory is that the Antarctic used to be a landmass that was much closer to the equator and enjoyed a tropical climate. And this was proposed, I think, maybe 50, 60 years ago. And they said that, you know, the theory around it was that the crust of the Earth actually shifts around the mantle, like they usually compare it to the orange of a skin of an orange sort of moving around the core. That is been, you know, it's a pretty wild theory. It certainly has no scientific basis. But what you'd be saying is that the whole Antarctic landmass moved from the region of the equator all the way up to where it is now. And, you know, I certainly have no belief in that. But another thing, just in general, about virtually every Atlantis theory, all the other Atlantis theory, they don't try to match this very detailed account that Plato gave. We can draw a city plan. We can depict exactly what this island looked like based on, you know, these numerous details that were provided by the ancient people.
Oh, yeah, the picture you supplied us that we have on the website, I mean, just fantastic in terms of what it used to look like.
Yeah, and, you know, most of these other Atlantis theories don't even bother trying to match their landmass, wherever it might be, to these descriptions because they don't have a match. You know, they say, well, you know, Plato says it was in the Atlantic, mm-hmm. on the opposite continent, so it must have been in this region, or it must have been the Antarctic. Does anybody try to match the Antarctic to this description? No. Does anybody try to match the land masses around Bimini to these detailed instructions? No. Does, let's say, Santorini match it? No. I mean, none of them remotely match it, and they don't even try to match it because they don't have a match. We've matched it down the line. I extracted over 50 physical clues that Plato provided, and we went down the line. Every single one of them matches. If you go to my website, discoveryofatlantis.com, click on About the Project, you can see these matches, and if you see that, you will come to the sure conclusion that there is no way in the world that this can be coincidental.
No. You know, if you had 50 matches, I mean, that starts to defy logic and odds.
That was 50 matches before we even did the expedition. After we did the expedition and we went and took a closer look at that hill, which I believe is the Acropolis Hill, there's even many more. You know, the canal that runs halfway down the mountain, the two rivers that come off the summit, the canal wall 1.5 miles away from the summit. All of those match too. So you'd be saying all those 50 matches are coincidental. These anomalies on the seafloor that I predicted where they would be found, matching, that's also coincidental, and it's also coincidental that it's in the Eastern Mediterranean region where the story originated, where civilization started, and where this flood and seismic activity is proven to have taken place. This whole thing is just one grand coincidence. Well, I don't think so.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hello.
Hello.
Good morning. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm on.
Yep.
I'm coming a little bit in the defense of Florida and Dr. Manson Valentine's theory. I'm from Florida. Excuse me. I do know of some things down there that's never really been looked into. There are the remains of a very ancient civilization in the Everglades.
Well, there's no question that there are a number of regions on this planet that have had sunken cities. I mean, nobody doubts that at all. The big question is where was Atlantis?
Well, I think that it's not. You keep talking about it being an island, and I've always been under the impression it was a continent, as big as a continent, of which these other places could be outlying outposts.
Robert, you want to address that?
Yes. The reason why some people assume that it must have been the size of a continent is because of that part in Plato's Timaeus where he says that it was larger than Libya and Asia.
Well, and which, again, now, does he say, like you said, nobody knew the word Libya. So what does he say? Does he call it Libya?
He says Libya and Asia, but what we're interested in is what did the original people that actually saw this island say? And we don't have that. We don't know. They give a description of the island, but when it comes to names like Atlantic and the Pillars of Hercules and Libya, I mean, Libya? What, 12,000 years ago, there was no such thing as Libya? They didn't know what Asia was, so the size of it makes no sense whatsoever. And when you look at the details, when you give it that DNA test, all those surface readings fall apart. They don't stand up to scrutiny.
If you were in a if you were in a time machine, Robert, would you like to go back to that era and just kind of witness and then get out of there really fast?
Oh, absolutely. Well, in the beginning, I mean, this was a glorious civilization, and I was just at Cape Greco in Cyprus, where there's some sites that, you know, if you saw them, you'd be convinced that this must have been Atlantis without anything else, because it's just so spectacular. And you look at these rocks that are overlooking that plain, that valley that's currently underwater, and I just wonder, you know, what have these rocks, what have these mountainsides seen? It's just an incredible, incredible place.
Are you getting any support from any scientists?
Well, sure, we have a lot of scientists working, you know, with us. These maps that we created, these underwater maps, these are the world's first look at the seafloor on the Mediterranean. And these were done by some of the world's top geophysicists. The softwares that were written and created to lower the water level so we could see what the Mediterranean would look like at any water level, that was done by one of the best in the world. And the 3D models that we create, you can see these 3D models of the Eastern Mediterranean on our site. Those are all extremely high-tech, cutting-edge scientific work. I work with top geophysicists in the world, get advice from them, ask them questions. Most of the scientists that help me out do it on a confidential basis. And that is because of this, because the grand poobah of the scientific world has said that Atlantis doesn't exist, and they all have to fall in line. They risk their reputations. They risk losing their jobs, their tenure. They can't come out and say what they believe, but they certainly, you know, if any of them are honest enough and don't just repeat like a bunch of parrots what their teachers taught them and study this for themselves, they'll see that there's a lot more to it than Plato. This is the belief structure of the entire ancient world we're talking about.
Well, there's no doubt about that. I just interviewed a psychiatrist on Friday who believes he has found the reincarnated Marilyn Monroe with a patient of his. And his academia is chasing him out. I don't even think they want him back into one of the hospitals that he's been working at. I mean, when you stick your neck out, you're going to get it chopped off by mainstream, aren't you?
I mean, that those kinds of things are not, you know, let's say reincarnation or whom, you know, who she was. That those things are not easy to verify. But Atlantis is different. We have a very vivid description of what this place looked like. We have a lot of clues. We have the technological ability to look at the seafloor and test it and see if it was there. Now, if I just come out with something that's not verifiable, okay, of course scientists not only have the right, but they're obliged to say no. But ours is something they can test. Why don't we look and see before coming to a conclusion? Isn't that what science is supposed to be about?
You got that right.
Isn't that what it's
for? Stay with us, Robert. We'll be back. We'll take final phone calls. This is a fast night, too. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Well, tomorrow will be another one of our surprise guests. A lot of times we just keep a moment open in the event things change or there's some new bizarre story that we might want to cover and quickly adapt. So get ready for that. And then on Wednesday, it'll be our full moon night of open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Robert, make sure you stay on the line after the show for a bit, and we'll get you some information for you and Richard C. Hoagland to get together, okay?
Oh, great. Thanks, George.
We'll do that. Now back to the phones we go. Let us go to our East of the Rockies line. Welcome to the program. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is John, and I hope I get this right the first time around.
Give it your best shot, John.
Thank you, George. Robert, my father was a merchant marine, and you know how they get around the world. I probably got brothers and sisters in every port. But it took 20 years to find him, and in that time, I was pretty upset at the guy. But toward the end of his life, we got in a calm arrangement, and he left me a lot of letters and stuff that he wrote aboard ship from his relatives. He's second generation U.S., but he's long deceased, so I can use this. But I don't use his last name, but it's Nicosia. And I didn't think much of it until you put together tonight a lot of the things that he gave me that are still on paper. And it all jibes perfectly with, and more. There's a lot more that he said, which I'm sure is in your material. And I'm going to be paying close attention tonight to how to study your material, how to get a hold of it and that stuff. Shortly, I'm going to be going to the Ukraine. And from there, if everything goes well, I'll take a stop off in Nicosia and see what it's all about. But I'm telling you, my hands are still shaking with all of what you put together that he gave me also. Later, he became a Jehovah's Witness, and I asked him why of all religions, and he said, well, they are sitting on top of a bomb of a lot of stuff that they don't talk about, but they have a whole lot of it stored away, you know. So that's about all I can tell you. I'd love to know if you know any of the religious cultures that are sitting on stuff like this, you know, that are nervous about it or whatever, because it really needs to come out.
Well, all religious cultures believe they're sitting on top of something, but I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt in my mind that if you want a blockbuster as far as religious texts, just go straight to the Urantia book, because that will give you I don't think there's another book that's been published like that in the history of this world. And you know, this whole project was started by that. And you know, I tested it. I do have a scientific mind. You know, the Urantia book says the Garden of Eden was in such and such place, and it looked this way, and there was a land bridge connecting it, and it was this wide. And I put it to the test, because when that book was first published in 1955, there were no maps of the seafloor. And I created those first maps in the history of the world, and it's there. And we went to the hill, which it calls the central sector, where the remains, the main structures were, and that's where these anomalies appeared. And it also matches Plato's text for Atlantis. So remember, this isn't just about Atlantis. This is the Garden of Eden. Atlantis is small compared to the magnitude of this discovery when you think about it being the Garden of Eden. It doesn't get any bigger than this. And if you want a controversial dynamo, read the Urantia book.
I agree with that. It's a big book, but it's got some great things in it.
That's right.
Next up, Wild Card Line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Hi. Yes, this is Dustin calling from Vancouver.
Sure, Dustin.
I just felt I had to call in. I had a dream about a year ago while I was in Greece. It was a really vivid, lucid dream. It wasn't quite lucid, but it was just a very vivid dream that I just felt like I was reliving something over again. And I'll just tell you what the dream was. I was a priest, which felt like Atlantis, and I was walking out this great big long sand pier and to go talk to this king that was standing at the very end looking over the ocean. And there was men following me shooting arrows into these like giant teepee like torch things that would light up as I was walking underneath them. And I came to the end and stood by this king, and I was supposed to advise him as to what we should do or something. And there was this horrible screaming and thunder and lightning coming from the distance across the ocean, and that we knew that it was time or whatever, and we had to began running back down this long, it was just like a big long sand pier that went out into this ocean, and came to this wall that looks like almost exactly like what I've seen on the internet here, and it's shocking to me, because also the I had heard the Edgar Cayce version and everything, and it just didn't really seem right. Like, it didn't go to the dream, so I didn't really think the dream was real. I thought maybe it was something that it was just a dream and not like a past life or something. But now looking at this, you know, when you're in a dream and you kind of feel the like the presence of everything around you, even though you can't see it exactly, you know, like where you are. Looking at the map of this is exactly how I imagined the water. Like it was more of a U shape that we were running back towards like the land, and it wasn't just like an, it didn't feel like an island. It felt like we had land to go to. And then at the end of the dream, as I'm running towards the walls and we're climbing up these giant stairs and going, and I'm trying to find all the, my loved ones and everything. And we end up going into this desert and we're walking through the desert as this water is like coming up to our knees, and we're just trying to get closer to the desert before we're drowned. And
how do you know it wasn't a past life?
Well, that's what I'm starting to think now that I'm looking at this.
You might have been an Atlantean.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, and it was that I was a priest in the dream. And I also have had, like, images. I'm an artist, and I've had images of very, like, Atlantean imagery and, like, seashells that would hang from their eyelids, which may have been, I don't know, in some sort of fashion or something back then, or has some meaning to the Atlantean culture. But, yeah, it's been very interesting. And I have red hair and green eyes, and I had heard that that's where they...
I don't know about that. Red hair and green eyes, Robert, you ever hear that? Robert? Well, we've lost him again. So that's the second time the Cypriot phone company has clipped off. We should get them together with Art's phone company in Manila, and they could have one heck of a group together. Okay, well, I'll continue with your open line phone calls. Perhaps you can ask me a question. I, too, am an expert on Atlantis. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, this is Chris from Bloomington, Indiana.
Hey, Chris, welcome to the show.
How you doing tonight?
Good, thanks.
Okay, well, you guys have talked a lot about the Urantia book tonight, and I wanted to bring up another book that I thought was really interesting and had some really interesting things to say about Atlantis. It's The Ancient Secret of the Flower of Life. By a man who calls himself Drunvalo, and as far as the last name, Mendelchek, I believe is pretty close. Are you familiar with the work?
I am not. Let's see if we'll bring in Robert. You back with us again, Robert?
I'm back. This time I could hear you, and you couldn't hear me.
No. I was going to say the Cypriot phone company's got us tonight, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead again. If you want, with that question.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to, like I said, bring up it's a work in two volumes, and it's called The Ancient Secret of the Flower of Life. And in it, the author lays out some pretty interesting theories about Atlantis. And, you know, he touches on the fact that there was aliens in contact with them. And he's got some theories about some walls that were specifically built that divided the island into four quadrants. And then he kind of touches on some things with the masculine and the feminine. Are you familiar with this work, Robert?
Robert? We lost him again. Darn. Well, I am not, but we'll pass it on to him, okay?
Yeah, Drunvalo would probably be an excellent guest. You should check into it, George.
Okay. Appreciate you being part of the program. Yeah, we lost him again. Just when I knocked the Cypriot phone company, they clipped him. How about that? Wildcard line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, Mr. Norrie. How are you?
Good, sir. Thank you.
Well, I had some things I wanted to mention to Robert, but I'll mention them to you.
Okay, do that. And if we get him back on again, I'll plug him right on.
Very good. The first one would be, do you know about the Gonchas?
The Gonchas? No.
Yes.
Okay. I do not.
The Gonchas were on the Canary Islands, and it was the Spaniards who landed on the Canaries, and when they were able to communicate with them, they found out that, and they were blonde-haired, blue-eyed, and fair-skinned, and they did build in red, white, and black stone. And they told the Spaniards that they thought that they were the last people left on the planet, and that their island continent had sunk many years before. Another thing, too, is that in Plato's Republic, he speaks about lakes that Atlantis had. And on one side it was blue, and on the other side it was green. In other words, one side was fresh water, the other side was salt water. And sure enough, on the Canaries, there is a lake where one side is blue and one side is green. So as far as that evidence goes, it sure sounds like Atlantis was in the Atlantic. The other point I wanted to make also is that, you know, there seems to have been two catastrophes, not one. There seems to have been a catastrophe where we had the Great Flood, which apparently, according to scientists, is somewhere around 5,500 B.C. The other one would be, of course, with Velikovsky, which would be 1,500 B.C.
Right.
Now, the point is that it says that Atlantis sunk. It wasn't covered over by water, but it sunk. So anything that was in the Mediterranean when the Great Flood happened was covered over by water. And the other point I wanted to make also is that there was a controversy during the time of Solon, or at least there's a controversy now, I should say, and that is that they're not sure whether Solon meant 900 years before his present era or 9,000. But if you add 6 to 9, you get 15. And if it was in 600 B.C. and you add 900 years to that, the catastrophe would have happened in 1500 B.C. So it seems to me that Atlantis was in the Atlantic and that the Canaries seem to have been a part of Atlantis and that it was in 1500 B.C. and that, as a matter of fact, there are some writings which talk about Atlantis, but I've done a lot of study on Atlantis.
Let's see if we got Robert back here. Robert, are you back?
I'm with you.
You're there. Have you been able to hear much of what he was saying when we got you back in?
Yes, I did.
Okay, do you want to react to any of that?
Well, first of all, about the 1500 B.C. thing, you know, that's tied to the Santorini explosion, the island of Thera having a volcano that exploded, leaving the current island of Santorini. You know, remember that Atlantis was supposed to be where civilization originated. And this is the Egyptian high priest talking, and these were the people that had the most ancient civilization in that time and knew history better than anybody. That's why all the Greeks went there routinely to get historic records from them. Certainly, 2,600 years ago, when Solon was in Egypt, the Egyptian priest would not have thought of an explosion that happened 1,000 years before their time as something that was, you know, anything of historic merit. In other words, they certainly would not have believed that civilization began 1,000 years before their time. They're talking about distant
way
antiquity.
Back, way back. Yeah.
Way back. And also, you know, you can go back and forth with the Atlantic thing. Let me put it to you this way.
Something happened to the Atlantic, I would assume, right?
Well, I don't know. But if I tell you that an earthquake in Los Angeles sunk an island, sunk Long Island near New York, would you believe that?
I would say, how in the heck could that happen?
Well, that's what you'd be saying if you say that an earthquake in the eastern Mediterranean sunk an island in the Atlantic.
I would have said something. I would say if there was an island in the Atlantic and it sunk, it was caused by something else.
Exactly. And you're talking about times where there were no communications. There were no, you know, you don't have anything in the Canary Islands. You don't have a landmass match. So, of course, this is all conjecture. You can go back and forth forever. But in the end, you have to match what the ancient people wrote about this place. You can't just say, well, it was probably in this region. Okay, fine. Well, people have concocted these theories all over the world. But what do you have as proof? Do you have a landmass that matches this very detailed account? Do you have is it underwater? Have you found any remains that are man-made? Do you have accounts of a flood? Another thing that, you know, rejects the Atlantic theory is that ocean waters can never rise to the degree that is spoken of. Atlantis Island was supposed to be a very mountainous island that rose sharply from the seafloor and went up to a great height. So the Egyptians said it was one of the highest mountains in the world that was on this island. So you're talking about a mountain that's at least several thousand feet high with the cities located at the southern foothills. If you place that in the Atlantic Ocean, you say, well, most of it at least was covered by water, you'd be saying that the Atlantic Ocean rose by thousands of feet, which is impossible. Even massive tsunamis in oceans can only, you know, only raise the water a few inches. And they only pick up speed and height when they reach shore. No, Atlantic Ocean has never risen that high, certainly not dramatically. And melting ice water cannot rise quickly enough to be thought of as something catastrophic. It, you know, may raise 1 inch a year. So the only place that can match this idea, this story, this legend of a very mountainous island rising thousands of feet into the air that was engulfed suddenly with, you know, associated seismic and volcanic activity is the Mediterranean basin, which science has proven was flooded by this massive torrent of water from the Atlantic.
What are the odds?
That rose thousands of feet.
Robert, what are the odds of the Mediterranean drying up again?
Well, the odds are absolutely certain. You know, the scientists say that this is going to happen again. It's this very strange geological phenomenon that occurs near the Strait of Gibraltar with this meeting point between Spain, you know, and when they meet together, when the Eurasian and the African plates collide, this Gibraltar Strait becomes a dam. It's happened again, again, and again.
So it's possible again. All those structures will be seen again, at least
possible.
At that time.
Yeah, the scientists say, you know, count on it. It's going to happen again. And once they do, once that strait becomes a dam again, the Mediterranean will start to evaporate it again. And in the space of 1,000 to 4,000 years, the water level will drop a mile or more. And, yes, it is possible that all those places that used to be above water will be above water again, but it won't be in our lifetime.
Atlantis will rise again. Maybe,
Quite possibly.
Well, Robert, we're coming up where we're almost out of time. Where do you get the book still? I know you published it a few years ago. Is it still available?
It is still available, but we just came out with the expanded edition, which has 8 pages of color images from the expedition, and it shows the sonar images. It has an expedition report by Commodore Robert Bates, who was the expedition leader, and it has a new preface by me and a new foreword by Colin Wilson, one of England's most prominent authors.
Good guy.
Who has, you know, who's come out and said that there's no doubt in his mind that we have found it. Now, this expanded edition is not available everywhere. I recommend them getting it straight from our distributor through our site, discoveryofatlantis.com. It's cheaper and immediate shipping.
We can go right to your website and get all that information?
Yeah, just go to discoveryofatlantis.com, hit about the book, and then you can purchase it right there from the distributor directly.
Great. Robert, thanks. Enlightening show.
Thank you, George.
He's in Cyprus, where their phones don't work. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone. And welcome back to Coast with our special guest, Robert Sarmast. Robert, I had always heard that the Garden of Eden was by the Euphrates and the Tigris Rivers.
Well, I believe that, well, you know, keep in mind that Adam and Eve were driven out of the garden. They were banished from the garden. So just right there, you have to take into, you know, consideration that they had at least two homes, don't you think?
Yes, that's a good point.
They were someplace, okay. And they went someplace else. What we're looking at is the original home, the first home before they were driven from the garden. And I do believe we found it. Just getting back to your other question quickly about what we found, you know, when the book was published, we saw the rectangular valley. I could barely make out this low mountain that was in the middle of this valley, which matched the description of the Acropolis Hill, the size, location, everything was perfect. And even though there are hundreds of mountains, underwater mountains in the area, I pointed to that one and that one alone. And I put its exact coordinates in the book, and I said, this is where the remains of Atlantis are going to be found. When I came to Cyprus after I talked to you last time, and we did an expedition about a year later, and we developed some maps and models of the area, and sure enough, on that hill and nowhere else, we found a gigantic wall that runs ruler straight for 2 miles before it makes a sudden right-hand turn. And it seems to be encompassing this hillside territory, complete with canals and river paths that are coming off the summit. So on top of the 50 matches that I had with Plato's description when the book was published, now we had another dozen or so with real sonar data that we gathered, allowing us to see the seafloor for the first time. It's just impossible that all these are coincidental. And, yeah, we have found structures down at the depth, which matched the description of Atlantis perfectly.
Now, how come the mainstream, I know we had the big push 2 years ago, but I'm not hearing a lot about it anymore. How come?
Because I think mostly, you know, well, we just had a sci-fi documentary made on it. We're organizing a second expedition. There are dozens of people involved. I mean, it is going ahead. But the problem right now, George, is that the scientific world has its head stuck in the sand. And, you know, for the first couple of years, it really kind of ticked me off. But I've begun to understand that this is not up to science. Science and scientists are involved with things they can smell, touch, and feel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, science can't go forward unless it has tangible facts that it can smell. So the people that are pushing the envelope, the people that have to go and make these discoveries, are going outside what is considered accepted fact. And so you have these scientists, which, you know, to my mind, in a lot of ways, they're just as crystallized as religionists, you know, and dogmatic in what they believe, that are just sitting around and saying, well, no, Atlantis doesn't exist. Plato just made the whole thing up. Well, what the hell are you talking about? You're saying that Plato, one of the greatest geniuses in the world, and Solon, the father of democracy, and the Egyptian priest, and the entire ancient world was just kidding? All their religions, their ceremonies and rituals, their architectural motifs, everything they believed in was just false? Now, even that I could accept, but, you know, we don't know today where civilization started. We don't know. The oldest one we know of that could be considered as a real civilization was Sumeria, which is only 5,000 or 6,000 years ago.
Right.
Nobody knows where these Sumerians came from. We don't know where the first alphabet started. We don't know where agriculture started. We don't know how it went about. We don't have a place where there were only 5 letters of the alphabet, and then they turned to 10 and 15 and 20. All of a sudden, Sumerians appear out of nowhere with a fully developed culture. Now, scientists, on one hand, are saying that we don't know where civilization started, and on the other hand, they're completely rejecting what the entire ancient world said was a fact. And they're saying, no, they don't know what they're talking about. And on top of that, they don't even bother to look. That's not science. You don't come to a conclusion without testing. The science means you form a hypothesis, then you test it, then you come to a conclusion. So at least in a scientific way, you have to say, maybe, since the entire ancient world believed in this thing, maybe it did exist. What's so crazy about an island going underwater?
Absolutely.
It happens all the time.
Well, I was going to say, it appears that there are a number of regions on this planet where land masses have gone under. We talk about off the coast of Egypt, what Alexandria used to be. They're now saying that hundreds, if not thousands of feet out, they're finding things. It appears that Mother Earth has gobbled up a lot of landmass, hasn't it?
Absolutely. You know, all the tectonic plates are constantly shifting. And, of course, that's especially true in the Mediterranean, which is one of the most geologically active areas in the world, particularly when you take into account the fact of the flood coming through the Strait of Gibraltar and doing what it did. I mean, this place, being an island in the Mediterranean, is something like being a sock in a washing machine. You're constantly going up, you're going down, the water level is going up, the basin itself is sinking, is rising. This place is a geological hotspot. Things happen all the time here.
Edgar Cayce, who has had some incredible predictions of his prophetic readings when he was alive, claims a lot of things. Earth changes, he thinks there's a Hall of Records at the base of the Sphinx. But he also believed that Atlantis was in the Bimini Islands in the Bahamas. I assume you think he was wrong, but maybe there were land masses there, huh?
Well, there could have been, of course. I do think he was wrong about that. You know, I'm psychics can't be right all the time. And, of course, a lot of people believe that it was in the Atlantic because of what it says in Plato's text.
Mm-hmm.
It specifically says that it was in the Atlantic. But
how did they know it wasn't called the Atlantic then, was it?
It wasn't called. The previous name was the Sea of Atlas. And, you know, reading Plato's Critias and trying to find this island is a little bit, or actually a lot, like a detective story, where it seems like, you know, there is this
there's this guy, let's say he's a criminal, and it seems like he's the one who committed the crime on the surface. But then you do a DNA test, and everything points away from this guy and to somebody else. So on the surface, if you look at it, well, it's, you know, and the critics says it was in the Atlantic. Well, there you go. But if you read the rest of it, 99% of the critics gives you details about this island, the animal life, the weather patterns, the kinds of metals that were on the island, the types of food, the location, the exact look of the island. When you actually read that part of it, you come to the realization that it couldn't have been in the Atlantic. And I'll give you three simple facts that in themselves should point anybody towards the Mediterranean.
All right.
Just simple logic. We're told that the Atlanteans, when they became wicked, were having a war with the Athenians in the eastern Mediterranean. And right there, Plato says that there was this giant earthquake, and all of these armies were, quote-unquote, swallowed up by the earth. Okay? And then while this happened, it says, at the same time, Atlantis was, in a similar manner, swallowed up by the sea. So this earthquake happened in the eastern Mediterranean, and it says, at the same time, Atlantis went underwater.
Right.
Are you telling me that an earthquake in the eastern Mediterranean sunk an island in 8,000 miles away in Bimini, and that there were people around that could that knew this? What they do, call each other 20,000 years ago and let each other know? It's not possible. That's number one. Number two, we know that Atlantis was where civilization was supposed to have started. The
right.
Egyptians told Solon that both the Greek and the Egyptian civilizations were offshoots of this original archetypal
mm-hmm.
civilization. We know for a fact that the cradle of civilization is the Near East. So what? Civilization started off the coast of Florida and left no remnants and then suddenly reappeared 10,000 miles away in the Near East? Number three. I mean, I could go on and on, but, you know, the story comes from the eastern Mediterranean. This is where it all came from, the Egyptians and the Greeks. This is where the Garden of Eden, all those biblical accounts took place. This is where the gods and goddesses were supposed to live.
I thought Atlantis was bigger than what I see here.
That's due to another surface read of Plato's text, where it says, you know, it was larger than Libya and Asia put together. So, well, in your mind, you say, well, it had to be bigger than Libya and Asia. Let's see, Asia is so big, Libya is so big. All right, but the people that actually saw this island and wrote about it couldn't have possibly mentioned Libya, since there was certainly no country named Libya 20,000 years ago.
True.
And they, of course, would not have known how big Asia was, and they wouldn't have used the word Asia. I mean, even in Plato's time, thousands of years after the island supposedly went underwater, they only knew a little bit of Asia. I mean, they knew a little bit of Southern Europe, a little bit of Near East, a little bit of Northern Africa, and that's about it. And they believed that this little landmass surrounding the Mediterranean was surrounded by a gigantic body of water. I mean, if you look at a map of what the Greeks in Plato's time thought the quote-unquote world consisted of, it's a joke. Now you project that another 10,000 years before Plato's time and think about what these people who had to, you know, just to get over a river, they had to bundle some reeds together, tie it together somehow and you know, get on top of it and swim across. I mean, this, you're talking about very, very ancient primitive times where if you traveled 100 miles without getting skinned alive, it would have been a miracle. What did these people know about geography? Are you telling me that they said, well, let's see, Asia is this? They didn't have satellites back then. They didn't know what Asia was, how big it was. They didn't know where the continents were. They were completely in the dark. So you have to keep those things into account. And it's when you inspect it in detail and you give it that DNA test, things start to unravel. The surface stuff suddenly completely vanishes, and you're left with hard physical data about what this island looked like, its physical features, and the other clues, the metals, where the plain was, where the mountains were, that kind of thing. And that's what I concentrated on.
Now Robert, did the island sink, or did the water just go up, go high?
It was a combined effect, because what happened when the flood came in and filled up the Mediterranean basin, you're talking about a gigantic volume of water which comes into this basin. And, you know, if you take that weight into consideration, that, of course, would have pushed down on the basin, pushed down on the mantle, and the entire Mediterranean basin would have actually
dropped. Yeah.
In combination of the rising water level of all this ocean water filling up the Mediterranean. And that's what it says in Plato's text, is that when, you know, these fighting armies were swallowed up by the earth, and it says Atlantis was swallowed up in a like manner. So it was combined, and of course it would have taken a long time, but those people that were living on that valley at the foothills would have gotten a pummeling.
I assume at the same time then, Egypt lost some of its land mass. I mean, that's it's right in that same region.
Well, yeah, I mean, it would have been, most of the people would have been, remember, Mediterranean Basin is like a scar on the face of the earth,
yeah.
So you have this massive drop. But yeah, the Nile Delta, you can see that it still goes down, and you can still see its remains on the seafloor of the Mediterranean a mile below. So most of the people, and a lot of those cities and civilizations, as primitive as they were, would have been living down there, and they're long gone. But I knew early on when I started the research and getting the expedition together that the only chance of finding anything man-made down there after a flood like that, after the tremendous geological activity, would be the gigantic structures that are described belonging to the Acropolis Hill in the middle of that valley. So I concentrated on that. And because it's on the eastern end of Cyprus and the flood would have come from the west, I sort of guessed that, well, most of the island would have blocked that massive rush of water. And there is a chance that maybe something is still existing around this hill, which we could see on those early maps. And then we went there, and it's there. It's still there. It's this gigantic wall, 300 feet thick, 2 miles long, ruler straight. You have canals. You have river paths coming off the summit. Even the distance of this canal wall at the base of the mountain to the summit itself is exactly 1.5 miles, the precise measurement that Plato gave us. This cannot be coincidental.
Tell me about the equipment you used to verify some of these theories.
We conducted what is the world's most scientific Atlantis expedition in history. And this was in November 2004. It was done by some of the best underwater specialists in the world, Phoenix International and EDT here in Cyprus. These are some of the guys that work on the Titanic all the time and with James Cameron and so forth. We used a ship with a side scan sonar, which is a very sophisticated deep water sonar unit that gets lowered to the depths and gets dragged by a cable behind the ship. And we fly it about 50 feet above the seabed. And the ship zigzags across a certain area, and the sonar collects data, which shoots back up through that cable to the computers on the ship, and we get a sonar-generated image. So we're looking at the seafloor live while we're going over it. And we saw this wall that, you know, all these scientists were saying it couldn't be there from the earlier maps. You know, when we developed the maps after the book was published, we got our hands on some new data that the French had collected on an unrelated expedition. And that's the first time that we saw this wall making this 90-degree turn on the canals, which was astonishing because it was just on that hill that I put the coordinates for. There's hundreds of mountains there, and there's nothing else around those mountains, and it just happens to be on this one mountain that I pointed to before we could even see it up close. And the scientists, when they saw that map, they said, oh, that can't be there. There has to be something wrong with your data because it's striking. You know, you don't have ruler straight 2-mile-long walls that are consistent. This wall is also consistently 35 feet high throughout its course. And they said, no, it can't be there. There has to be something, because it's so astonishing. They couldn't believe it. So we did our own expedition. We used an even better, more sophisticated type of sonar, and we went, and it is there. So we have two independently gathered data sets showing the exact same thing. There's no doubt that it is there. And, you know, the proof is there. If you go to discoveryofatlantis.com, you can see the sonar images that we created using the latest technology available in the world. We published an expanded edition of the book just a few months ago with all the pictures and the story of the expedition and the sonar images. You can see the whole thing in the book there.
And, you know, at this point, the scientists suddenly that were so skeptical around the world, suddenly they're not around anymore. They're not saying anything because they don't have an explanation.
I was
going to
say, you had, you know, a couple of years ago, you had, what, the French geologist and there was a German physicist. Both of them were kind of vocal with their own theories. What happened to them? They fade away?
Well, they faded away. One of them was saying that, oh, this mountain that you found with all these physical, you know, anomalies is just a... it's just an underwater volcano. But, you know, it's just incredible what some of these so-called scientists will come up with, you know, these professional skeptics. You don't have, we don't have, there's no such thing as a rectangular craterless volcano.
No.
It doesn't exist.
I don't think so.
They're trying to explain this thing away that can't be explained away. And another guy was saying, well, maybe it's just a mudslide. You don't have a mudslide that leaves no footprint, that leaves no trail. There's just this wall sticking out like a sore thumb in the middle of nowhere with nothing else like it anywhere in the vicinity, exactly where I put the coordinates for and said that this is the place where the remains of Atlantis City will be found.
Do they even acknowledge the fact that there are, you know, artifacts or structures down there?
Well, they don't have an explanation for this structure, certainly. They don't. There is no explanation for it. It has to be man-made. You don't have a massive wall, 35 feet high, going ruler straight for 2 miles, and then making a 90-degree angle in the middle of nowhere, 50 miles out.
If you were to see this same structure, let's say, on Mars, like, you know, Richard C. Hoagland sees when he interprets pictures, he wants to chat with you. He's very excited about your work, by the way. One would have to deduce that they were man-made, because nature just doesn't do that.
Exactly. And, you know, there'd be reason to doubt if, let's say, you were looking at an area and there were all these markings, there were all these walls zigzagging all over the place, and one of them happened to be straight. You say, well, this one, you know, some geological freak.
Exactly.
We don't have that. We developed a map of that entire area with hundreds of underwater mountains. There is nothing. It's just hills and smooth surface seafloor, just mud. And just on that one hill, you have this thing that's absolutely shocking.
Well, even
where
if,
did it come from?
Even if they didn't agree with you that that's where Atlantis was, why can't they at least agree with you that something sank, Robert?
Well, they know the Mediterranean sank. I mean, there's actually, they haven't even done testing for that. You got to remember, geophysics is a very new science. You know, it's in its era of infancy. And just 30 years ago, if you told scientists that the Mediterranean used to be an empty basin that was flooded through the Gibraltar, maybe, you know, they would have laughed at you. They would have said that's not possible. But it's been proven. So this is something that's going on, and more evidence is coming in. And a lot of the reasons why the scientists, matter-of-factly, sort of rejected this at first is that they said, well, we've done some core sample testing of the seafloor, on the Mediterranean seafloor, and we found that the flood must have happened around 5 million years ago.
Jeez. Well, stay with us, Robert. We're going to be right back with you on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We're going to take your phone calls next hour with our special guest, Robert Sarmast, who is live in Cyprus. You've been out there how long now, Robert?
2.5 years.
God. And the research continues?
The research continues. We did the expedition. We got our sonar results. Now we're going to do a second expedition because that wall is covered by mud, as you'd expect.
Sure.
Being down there for so long, what we want to do is use what's called a sub-bottom profiler, which is a more focused type of a sonar unit that can penetrate the silt and actually generate images of what's under it. Now, if it's rock, let's say, whatever it's made of, if it's not mud, and I don't think, you know, that's mud. Whatever it is, it's man-made. There's no doubt about that in my mind and millions of people around the world, and we're going to prove it with this next expedition.
Would you have structures there like we have in Greece, the Acropolis, for example? Is that possible, or is that really too far back?
No, there are whole cities down there, George. This rectangular valley is where civilization started. There are tons and tons of artifacts down there. But because it's deep sea, because the Eastern Mediterranean seafloor sank and the water level rose,
yes,
you're talking about a mile of water. And unfortunately, most people don't know this, but radar doesn't penetrate water. So the only way we can even see what's down there is by using sonar, which, you know, entails a costly ship and the equipment and the specialists. So the money factor is always a problem.
And because science has decided that, no, Atlantis doesn't exist and we don't even need to look for it, then it becomes a stumbling block for us. But we're surrounded with a bunch of very good people. We do need funding for the next expedition, and we're working on that. And we need help. You know, this is something that can change the world. And, there are tons of artifacts there, and I think for the next several decades, as underwater technology improves and as we have more and more ability to not only look down there, but to retrieve things, they're going to bring up just, you know, it's a living museum down there, and it's going to astonish the human race.
And there could be millions and millions of skeletons down there, too, don't you think?
There are. It's just a matter. I mean, I think that this is going to continue for a long, long time to come. And I'm very excited about the new technology as it develops. But right now, it's just the cost is very prohibitive.
Cyprus itself, which is part then, as you say, of Atlantis, when was it named Cyprus? How did it get its name? Do you know? I don't.
I don't know when Cyprus got its name, but, you know, it's a pretty ancient place. They have Neolithic remains here that I've seen myself that are 8,000 years old. I mean, there is no end to the archaeological remains here, and of course, it's going to continue. Every once in a while, you hear about something else they found. But of course, the area that we're specifically interested in is about a mile underwater, which is where the people would have been living. So where we're living right now, the current form of Cyprus would have been a mountaintop to those ancient people. And because of the geological structure of Cyprus, you know, this thing just shoots up straight out of the seafloor. The whole island formed due to two tectonic plates clashing and one of them buckling under and the other one rising up. So Cyprus itself is a very fascinating geological structure. It's an ophiolite structure, which means that the even its highest point, which is called Mount Olympus, believe it or not, used to be on the seafloor. But this is the island itself is chock full of mythology. This is the center of the world. This is where Aphrodite supposedly rose from the water. I mean, you can go to the place. It's called Aphrodite's Rock. It's about a half hour from where I live right now, where she supposedly came. The mountaintop is called Mount Olympus. Cypriot mythology itself says that the gods of Atlantis used to live to the south of the island.
I bet.
Adonis and Aphrodite supposedly roamed around here. I mean, there's no shortage of mythology, their own historical accounts that say it all happened right here, and we're just confirming what they've been saying all along.
That landmass before it sank must have been gorgeous. I'm sure it had beaches and everything else.
It did, and the beaches here are still phenomenal. I mean, there's some beaches here, there's some formations here that if you look at them, I mean, you really get the impression that this place must have been Atlantis. It's absolutely stunning. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous place. Clear water, beautiful weather. They even found elephant remains in Cyprus. You know, because Plato said in the Critias that there were elephants in Atlantis, which is very strange because how would elephants get to an island? And they found pygmy elephant remains in Cyprus, which is another source of mystery for them because they said, well, how did these elephants get here?
I would have thought maybe Asia when they could have walked over at that time, huh?
Well, yeah, but currently scientists say that Cyprus has been an island for millions of years. So how did they, you know what the science, quote-unquote scientific explanation is of how these elephants got to Cyprus?
No,
it's
huh?
Ludicrous.
Not, don't tell me they swam.
Yeah, so a whole herd of elephants decided to just swim into the open sea and go 60 miles and reach here in mass. I mean, it's ludicrous. But when we lowered the water level, you can see that land bridge. It was connected to Syria. They simply just walked over this land bridge. Not a big deal.
It's interesting, too, how close it is to the region where all this fighting is occurring right now. Relatively close.
It's a hot spot, that's for sure. You know, this Lebanon conflict has complicated a lot of things for us in regards to the second expedition.
Well, how is Cyprus in terms of safety? Man, they used to have problems a long time ago, didn't they? I always
about
used to
30
hear
years
about,
ago, they yeah. had a, there was a short war here with the Turks.
Greeks, and the Turks and the Greeks, right?
Yeah, yeah. So the island is sort of divided. It has Nicosia, its capital, is the only capital in the world right now that has a wall running straight down the middle. And the Turks control the northern, I would say, third of the island. And there's a UN buffer zone, and the Greeks live to the southern portion of the island. But it's very peaceful here. The people are very friendly. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. And we don't experience the conflict that's just maybe 100 miles from us. We don't really experience that here. Of course, the evacuees are coming here en masse, but most of that's already over and they've gone back home.
Do you believe that the Book of Urantia, which is an incredible book all to itself, also talks about extraterrestrials and visitations, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Do you believe that portion of it?
Absolutely.
You do? Okay. So,
I do. But, you know, these are not the extraterrestrials. These are not the little green men with antennas coming out of their heads. These are beings that are very much superior to us and very altruistic and very loving. They've come to the realization that the universe is a structured place with, you know, a mechanism, a series of laws, and they abide by them. And this whole bad rap that extraterrestrials have in our world right now, where they're out to get us or take our gold or eat us, or it's just nonsense. If, you know, we've only been around for a few thousand years, or even, let's say, half a million or a million years, in the big scheme of things, in a universe that's practically infinite and ageless, that's nothing. That's not even a blink of an eye. If there are civilizations, if there are worlds out there that have life, and if they started even just a little bit before us, they would still be so much more advanced than we are that it would boggle the mind. Look, 100 years ago, going to the moon was considered ridiculous. Now we're going to the Mars. Just imagine where we'll be 100 years from now. That's 100 years in this universe is nothing. So the likelihood of there being beings that are out there, you know, inhabiting other worlds and being much more advanced and intelligent than us is not a long shot. It's almost a certainty.
What's the next trip then for you in terms of funding? What can you do if you had a blank check?
Well, you know, I've taken this, it's been a personal mission. It's been an excruciatingly challenging and rewarding adventure. I wouldn't give it up for anything. But realistically, this should not be done by me at this point. This should be done by our top universities, by our top specialists with the massive funding that it needs. But as it is, science can't go forward without facts. And there's a sort of a line in the sand that they can't cross. So I can't really blame them. But on the other hand, you know, when I look at the magnitude of this discovery and what it means for the human race, for just, let's say, less than $100,000, we could take this to a finish. If your listeners, each one contributed a dime, we get this thing done. But we do need help. People come to the website, if you buy the book or donate or whatever, we need that. We need people to help us. This is huge. This can change history, because all of these problems right now in this world with these crystallized religions, you know, Islam and Christianity and Judaism and so forth, they're all stuck in their sacred scriptures that we know are faulty.
We've got a lot of people who want to talk with you. The phones are starting to ring now. Robert Richard C. Hoagland, our science advisor, very excited about your work. He's on the line with us now, too. Go ahead, Richard. I know you had a couple questions for Robert.
Yeah, first of all, Robert, I want to tell you what an honor it is to talk to you. I've been following your work for a couple of years, and I think you're a real pioneer. I agree with everything you're saying about academia, except for the last part. I think it's a disgrace that academia doesn't get involved. An absolute disgrace, because they're really such cowards that they will not dare, in this era of publish or perish, to venture one micron beyond the accepted tautology. And you are doing cutting edge work, and you should be supported. So I have a present for you. I may have some people who have some funds to help you do what you need to do. So you need to ask George or Tom how to get hold of me. We need to have a conversation privately. No promises, but there could be some people who will be very supportive of what you're trying to accomplish.
Oh, thank you so much, Richard. That's great news, and we always welcome people that want to come along and help. And, you know, we have some amazing people helping us. This has been going on for years and years. We estimate, you know, millions of dollars have been spent on this if we think of the time that the people have put in. But this is an expensive project, and yes, you're right, it is a disgrace to science that they're sort of have their head in the sand. I try not to think about it. But, yeah, you're right. You know, and people in our circles consider at least certain parts of the scientific world as modern-day shamans.
Well, you know, when I look back at my career going all the way back to Cronkite, I was able to use other sources of funding to do innovative science. It's kind of been my pattern, so let's see if we can do it again, because you are doing something that is at the cutting edge. It needs to be supported. And we'll just do it without them, and then, of course, they'll all come running and claim that they knew it all along. You know, that's what usually happens.
Yeah, that's right.
Now,
that's
let me give you one quick present here before I have to go.
Sure.
George doesn't even know this. He's dying to know what I have as a present for you. I have a colleague named David Flynn, who's been on Coast a couple, three times. He's going to be at my Joshua Tree Conference in October. David is a kind of an exoarchaeologist in the fundamentalist Christian community and has been looking very heavily at the Middle East, particularly Syria, Lebanon, Israel, et cetera, et cetera. And he and I have come up with some remarkable evidence that indicates, George, that the transposition of our great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmothers from Sidonia came to that part of the planet. Specifically, Mount Hermon is involved. The Baalbek Valley, which is now the center of this incredible new crisis. It's all part of this equation. It's all part of this exquisite puzzle, Robert. And when you talk about Critias and how these guys came from the heavens, my colleague and I may have a point of origin for these guys. And I will predict that if we can get you the funds to go down and bring up things, artifacts, if we can find libraries, we are going to perhaps, George, be able to put together the missing link between Earth and Mars.
Well, that would be exciting.
Wouldn't that be phenomenal?
Would be exciting.
Phenomenal. And it's science. It's testable. And all we got to do, Robert, is get you some money. That should be the most trivial part of this.
Yeah, and, you know, in the big scheme of things, when you think about what you know, money is wasted on and what this can do for rewriting human history and adding to our knowledge of our, you know, of our history, of where we come from, it's nothing.
So
it's less than $100,000. We can take it to a finish.
As Joan Rivers used to say, we need to talk.
Richard, why do you think that the mainstream scientists don't even want to listen to the theory?
I believe there is a terror under all of this that all the history we think we know is absolutely wrong. And so many careers, George, so many livelihoods, so many reputations, so many egos are fastened to what we read in our texts of the last 6,000 years that when someone like Robert or myself comes along and has some other ideas, you know, it's almost like they have to stone us to death to keep their worldview static and their employment assured.
When you look at his maps, his Mediterranean baseline maps, you could see exactly the outline of what very well could have been that island.
Oh, no, 12,000 there's no question. That's why I've been looking at this for the last 2 years. And what he doesn't know, and no one has known in this audience except they know it now, is that, you know, David and I have been working on where the refugees may have come and where those biblical, you know, legends, text, archetypal ideas, iconic ideas, Genesis 6, the whole Nephilim scenario that Mike Heiser and I debated vigorously with David at the Wisconsin conference. All of that comes together, and when I saw Robert's work 2 years ago, I said, bingo, he's got to have it because he doesn't know the other clues, and it's kind of like a double blind.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when he went to the Urantia book, which you would never in a million years think would have data. Robert, you got to follow the data, and you're doing exactly what you should be doing, and so let's see if we can help you, and give me a call, you know, sometime in the next few days, and let's see if I can put you in touch with some interested people.
All right,
we'll get
sure
the contact
will. Thank
for
you so
Richard.
Much.
Thanks, Richard.
My pleasure.
appreciate it. He's always Richard C. Hoagland. He thinks out of the box like you do, Robert. And you have to do that on these kinds of theories.
You do. And, you know, it's not that out of the box. I think most of what the mainstream scientific academic world believes is not that logical. You know, when I was in school, and there's this sort of aura of fatalism that permeates the so-called academic world that disgusted me when I was in my university years. Yeah. There's this sort of feeling that we can't know. You know, and I was just a young man at the time. What do you mean, we can't know? You know, it's just their attitude is leave well enough alone. We already know everything that's going to be found, you know, that there is to know, and it's already settled. No, we don't know anything. We don't know where civilization started. We don't know anything about the missing link. We don't know tons and tons of the most important questions that the human race faces. We don't have answers for, and I don't accept this fatalistic outlook. And, you know, that's the attitude that I took in my life. I said, I can know, and I will know, and I just followed what is true science. You form a hypothesis, which is, hey, at least maybe this place existed. Why don't we take a look? And I formed, you know, I created the maps, we created the software, brought it down, brought the water level down, and sure enough, it is there. This is true science. Not sitting back on your armchair and saying, oh, we can't know. Oh, Plato was just joking around, and that's it. Goodbye. That's not science.
Well, I tell you what, if you find some pyramids down there, then you're really up to something.
Absolutely, and I think once we use these special equipment, you know, we have the technology now. We're the first generation in history that has technological ability to not only map the seafloor, but to bring core samples up, to look under the mud, see what lays under. We have the ability. It's just a matter of people come along, like Richard, like you and others, to come along, help us, and get this done. I have the expedition formed. I know where the equipment is. Everything is done, ready to go. And we're right on that edge now where I think we can, not only in this lifetime, but in the next few years, to bring this discovery to the forefront and create the waves that are needed to take this, you know, give it momentum and take it all the way.
All right, Robert, you ready for some phone calls?
Sure.
Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment. Robert, what about the possibilities of some television documentaries?
Well, we just had one with the Sci-Fi Channel Quest for Atlantis that aired about a month ago.
Was that all you?
No, they also did Dr. Greg Little's work off the coast of Bimini.
Right.
And a little bit about Antarctica. It was a pretty long 2-hour.
Yeah, I'm talking about a complete documentary on one of your missions.
We want to do that with the next expedition, which is really the most important and most exciting one, because we've already done the legwork, so now we're just going to be looking under the mud and really bringing this to a finish. Because if that's rock, which I think it is, then, you know, it doesn't really, we don't need a sign saying Atlantis this way. If it's just piled rocks, that will finish it. It means it's man-made. It's 50 miles off coast. That's unprecedented. And a mile under. Well, how the hell did it get over there?
Well, and the big thing, too, is, of course, the entire so-called myth of Atlantis stemming from what Plato has written. There's no way, and I agree with you here, there's no way that this could have occurred way out in other regions of the Atlantic Ocean, and Plato would have heard about it. I'm not even sure mankind even traveled right around those periods out that far.
No, not like that. And certainly civilization, I mean, if you say that it's in the Atlantic or out Bimini or whatever, you're saying that these people were so advanced that, they could travel and conduct intercontinental wars and dominate another land all the way in the eastern Mediterranean. But also, you know, if this is where civilization started, where are its remains? Why did agriculture, reading and writing, architecture, religion, the story of these gods and goddesses, so-called, why are they here and not over there? Are you saying that they didn't leave a trace and then suddenly civilization displaced itself by 10,000 miles out of nowhere? You know, this is a time when people were living in mud huts in Western Europe. There was no civilization, much less the Atlantic and the coast of Florida. It just doesn't make sense. When you give it the DNA test, it has to be in this region where civilization started, where the story originated, where the Garden of Eden was supposed to be located, and where the earthquake took place.
And again, you believe they were jump started by perhaps beings from another land, huh?
So, I personally do believe that we, you know, that yes, I mean, to put it matter of factly, yes, I do. And you know, if you study ancient history and comparative world mythology, you have to come to the conclusion that something extraordinary happened in distant times. You know, when mythologists like Joseph Campbell or Carl Jung studied this phenomenon, because this is the situation. You have civilizations as far as South America to Egypt, all the way to Tibet and China and so forth, and all the ancient civilizations in the Near East, the Persians, Mesopotamians, Egyptians, Greek, Anatolians, all of them come up with the same story about how civilization started. And they say that it started on this beautiful paradisical island where beings from the heavens came down. And, of course, it's in the Bible, too. You know, came down and gave us the art of civilization. And they didn't just talk about this, you know, offhand. Their civilizations revolved around it. The kings and queens of these lands traced their bloodline back to these so-called gods. They fought wars in their name. They celebrated their New Year's, their Christmases, you know, their versions of them, about this story. This was their sacred scriptures. It dominated their lives and their civilizations. And this is from South America all the way to Egypt and further east. So when these mythologists study this phenomenon, they say, well, how could it be that, let's say, in South America, they were saying the same thing as they were saying in the Near East at a time when these people supposedly were not in communication? How could that be? And the conclusion that they come up with is that, well, if you isolate human beings wherever they are, they always come up with the same story, which is ludicrous. You're telling me that if you put people all over the world and you leave them alone, they're always going to come up with that same story, that it's just something that pops out of their psyche automatically?
I don't think so.
But that's the story. That's what they're saying.
Yeah, that's true, too. Now, how would you equate, and then we'll take some calls here, Robert, how would you equate the Sumerians, some of the work, for example, Zechariah Sitchin, where he, too, believes that we were visited, but he believes extraterrestrials came down into the summer area. Do you believe we may be talking about the same thing or two different episodes?
There were probably several episodes, and they probably went on for a good number of years. The ancient world talked about that ancient era as the golden age, when, quote-unquote, gods walked among men and taught men and civilized them, taught them to cook food, taught them sanitation, taught them how to read and write, taught them how to produce foods from the earth instead of having half their population starve to death every other year because of famines. This is what the entire ancient world taught matter-of-factly. And it's just something very wrong. You know, something went very wrong at some point, and their mission was aborted. And that's when they say the Dark Ages set in, which we're still in, according to the ancients. So there was this era in distant antiquity when, you know, they call it the Golden Age, when these gods walked among men and taught us how to live righteously, how to prosper, and how to love each other. And then that went wrong, and then suddenly we fell. That's in the Bible. That's in ancient mythology. That's in their history. It's everywhere. So, and then, of course, you have the scientific enigma of the missing link, where we don't know how we evolved suddenly from, you know, very primitive Neanderthals, and in the blink of an eye, suddenly we're splitting atoms. So when you put all these things together, and when you look at these ancient accounts, and when you know in our day and age, you know, about all these worlds out there, about the possibility of life forming, you know, there's billions of planets out there. Are you telling me that we're the only one? You know what the odds of that are?
I agree. Let's go to the phones. West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead. Where are you calling from?
I'm Delilah, and I'm from east and west of the Rockies and from around the world. I'm a truck driver here in the States.
You're everywhere.
And I'm originally from Bosnia, so You just said, George, recently that what if they would find pyramids there? That would be amazing, correct?
Yes.
Well, now I'm going to sound like Richard C. Hogan. Get ready, George. where I'm from, a little place, I'm from Sarajevo originally, but a little place 20 miles away from Sarajevo, it's called Visoko. They found a pyramid.
Oh, yeah. I know that.
Oh, you know about it?
Of course.
And you know what? It's like, you know how far away from Mediterranean it is? Like 100 miles.
Yep.
Not even that much. That so all this might be connected to that. So it's crazy. The so far they discovered it's made out of the blocks. So I entire time I thought it might be for the tourist thing, you know, but it's, I guess not.
Well, let's ask you this, Robert. Egypt is a stone's throw. Well, a long throw, from where this Atlantis region was. Is it possible that as it was sinking, those who did survive, and there must have been some, might have gone to Egypt and some of the other regions of the planet?
Well, that I mean, not only is it possible, that's exactly what the Egyptians said. I mean, they told Solon, they told the Greeks that these civilizations and the arts that they have, and the Greeks have, descended directly from these superior people. I mean, they were quite matter-of-fact about it. They, you know, all those pyramids, all the stories about the gods and goddesses, about the family that they grew, about the arts that they gave to humanity, the Egyptians said, you know, everything that you see here, so on, all our antiquity, all these structures, all these pyramids, these are just remnants of that original civilization that the Greeks eventually called Atlantis.
Okay, next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing tonight?
Good, thanks.
I have two questions, one's for you, because I never get on, but and one's for your guest. First of all, I was wondering, I believe I might have had an abduction experience, and I was wondering if you knew anyone who does past regressions, you know?
Dr. Bruce Goldberg and Brian Weiss, if you go to my website, you can get their email addresses, if you would.
Okay.
On the left-hand side, just click Show Info and then Guests.
Okay, and I have a question for your guest.
Sure.
About the Antarctic Atlantis. I was just wanting to know his take on it because I saw the pictures, and, man, it looks pretty good as a site for the...
Well, you know, the story of the Antarctic theory is that the Antarctic used to be a landmass that was much closer to the equator and enjoyed a tropical climate. And this was proposed, I think, maybe 50, 60 years ago. And they said that, you know, the theory around it was that the crust of the Earth actually shifts around the mantle, like they usually compare it to the orange of a skin of an orange, sort of moving around the core. That is been, you know, it's a pretty wild theory. It certainly has no scientific basis. But what you'd be saying is that the whole Antarctic landmass moved from the region of the equator all the way up to where it is now. And, you know, I certainly have no belief in that. But another thing, just in general, about virtually every Atlantis theory, all the other Atlantis theory, they don't try to match this very detailed account that Plato gave. We can draw a city plan. We can depict exactly what this island looked like based on, the, you know, these numerous details that were provided by the ancient
people. Oh, yeah, the picture you supplied us that we have on the website, I mean, just fantastic in terms of what it used to look like.
Yeah, and, you know, most of these other Atlantis theories don't even bother trying to match their landmass, wherever it might be, to these descriptions because they don't have a match. You know, they say, well, you know, Plato says it was in the Atlantic, mm-hmm. on the opposite continent, so it must have been in this region, or it must have been the Antarctic. Does anybody try to match the Antarctic to this description? No. Does anybody try to match the land masses around Bimini to these detailed instructions? No. Does, let's say, Santorini match it? No. I mean, none of them remotely match it, and they don't even try to match it because they don't have a match. We've matched it down the line. I extracted over 50 physical clues that Plato provided, and we went down the line. Every single one of them matches. If you go to my website, discoveryofatlantis.com, click on About the Project, you can see these matches, and you, if you see that, you will come to the sure conclusion that there is no way in the world that this can be coincidental.
No. You know, if you had 50 matches, I mean, that's that starts to defy logic and odds.
That was 50 matches before we even did the expedition. After we did the expedition and we went and took a closer look at that hill, which I believe is the Acropolis Hill, there's even many more. You know, the canal that runs halfway down the mountain, the two rivers that come off the summit, the canal wall 1.5 miles away from the summit. All of those match too. So you'd be saying all those 50 matches are coincidental. These anomalies on the seafloor that I predicted where they would be found, matching, that's also coincidental, and it's also coincidental that it's in the Eastern Mediterranean region where the story originated, where civilization started, and where this flood and seismic activity is proven to have taken place. This whole thing is just one grand coincidence. Well, I don't think so.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hello.
Hello.
Good morning. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm on.
Yep.
I'm coming a little bit in the defense of Florida and Dr. Manson Valentine's theory. I'm from Florida. Excuse me. I do know of some things down there that's never really been looked into. There are the remains of a very ancient civilization in the Everglades.
Well, there's no question that there are a number of regions on this planet that have had sunken cities. I mean, nobody doubts that at all. The big question is where was Atlantis?
Well, I think that it's you keep talking about it being an island, and I've always been under the impression it was a continent, as big as a continent, of which these other places could be outlying outposts.
Robert, you want to address that?
Yes. The reason why some people assume that it must have been the size of a continent is because of that part in Plato's Timaeus where he says that it was larger than Libya and Asia.
Well, and again, now, does he say, like you said, nobody knew the word Libya. So what does he say? Does he call it Libya?
He says Libya and Asia. But what we're interested in is what did the original people that actually saw this island say? And we don't have that. We don't know. They give a description of the island, but when it comes to names like Atlantic and the Pillars of Hercules and Libya, I mean, Libya? What, 12,000 years ago, there was no such thing as Libya? They didn't know what Asia was. So the size of it makes no sense whatsoever. And when you look at the details, when you give it that DNA test, all those surface readings fall apart. They don't stand up to scrutiny.
If you were in a time machine, Robert, would you like to go back to that era and just kind of witness and then get out of there really fast?
Oh, absolutely. Well, in the beginning, I mean, this was a glorious civilization, and I was just at Cape Greco in Cyprus, where there's some sites that, if you saw them, you'd be convinced that this must have been Atlantis without anything else, because it's just so spectacular. And you look at these rocks that are overlooking that plain, that valley that's currently underwater, and I just wonder, what have these rocks, what have these mountainsides seen? It's just an incredible, incredible place.
Are you getting any support from any scientists?
Well, sure, we have a lot of scientists working, with us. These maps that we created, these underwater maps, these are the world's first look at the seafloor on the Mediterranean. And these were done by some of the world's top geophysicists, the softwares that were written and created to lower the water level so we could see what the Mediterranean would look like at any water level, that was done by one of the best in the world. And the 3D models that we create, you can see these 3D models of the Eastern Mediterranean on our site. Those are all extremely high-tech, cutting-edge scientific work. I work with top geophysicists in the world, get advice from them, ask them questions. Most of the scientists that help me out do it on a confidential basis. And that is because of this, because the grand poobah of the scientific world has said that Atlantis doesn't exist, and they all have to fall in line. They risk their reputations. They risk losing their jobs, their tenure. They can't come out and say what they believe, but they certainly, if any of them are honest enough and don't just repeat like a bunch of parrots what their teachers taught them and study this for themselves, they'll see that there's a lot more to it than Plato. This is
this is the belief structure of the entire ancient world we're talking about.
Well, there's no doubt about that. I just interviewed a psychiatrist on Friday who believes he has found the reincarnated Marilyn Monroe with a patient of his, and his academia is chasing him out. I don't even think they want him back into one of the hospitals that he's been working at. I mean, when you stick your neck out, you're going to get it chopped off by mainstream, aren't you?
I mean, that those kinds of things are not, you know, let's say reincarnation or whom, you know, who she was. That those things are not easy to verify. But Atlantis is different. We have a very vivid description of what this place looked like. We have a lot of clues. We have the technological ability to look at the seafloor and test it and see if it was there. Now, if I just come out with something that's not verifiable, okay, of course scientists not only have the right, but they're obliged to say no. But ours is something they can test. Why don't we look and see before coming to a conclusion? Isn't that what science is supposed to be about?
You got that right.
Isn't that what it's
warned for? Stay with us, Robert. We'll be back. We'll take final phone calls. This is a fast night, too. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Robert, make sure you stay on the line after the show for a bit, and we'll get you some information for you and Richard C. Hoagland to get together, okay?
Oh, great. Thanks, George.
We'll do that. Now back to the phones we go. Let us go to our East of the Rockies line. Welcome to the program. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is John, and I hope I get this right the first time around.
Give it your best shot, John.
Thank you, George. Robert, my father was a merchant marine, and you know how they get around the world. I probably got brothers and sisters in every port. But it took 20 years to find him. And in that time, I was pretty upset at the guy. But toward the end of his life, we got in a calm arrangement. And he left me a lot of letters and stuff that he wrote aboard ship from his relatives. He's second-generation U.S. But he's long deceased, so I can use this. But I don't use his last name, but it's Nicosia. And I didn't think much of it until you put together tonight a lot of the things that he gave me that are still on paper. And it all jibes perfectly with, and more. There's a lot more that he said, which I'm sure is in your material. And I'm going to be paying close attention tonight to how to study your material, how to get a hold of it and that stuff. Shortly, I'm going to be going to the Ukraine. And from there, if everything goes well, I'll take a stop off in Nicosia and see what it's all about. But I'm telling you, my hands are still shaking with all of what you put together that he gave me also. Later, he became a Jehovah's Witness, and I asked him why of all religions, and he said, well, they are sitting on top of a bomb of a lot of stuff that they don't talk about, but they have a whole lot of it stored away, you know. So that's about all I can tell you. I'd love to know if you know any of the religious cultures that are sitting on stuff like this, you know, that are nervous about it or whatever, because it really needs to come out.
Well, all religious cultures believe they're sitting on top of something, but I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt in my mind that if you want a blockbuster as far as religious texts, just go straight to the Urantia book, because that will give you I don't think there's another book that's been published like that in the history of this world. And you know, this whole project was started by that. And you know, I tested it. I do have a scientific mind. You know, the Urantia book says the Garden of Eden was in such and such place, and it looked this way, and there was a land bridge connecting it, and it was this wide. And I put it to the test, because when that book was first published in 1955, there were no maps of the seafloor. And I created those first maps in the history of the world, and it's there. And we went to the hill, which it calls the central sector, where the remains, the main structures were, and that's where these anomalies appeared. And it also matches Plato's text for Atlantis. So remember, this isn't just about Atlantis. This is the Garden of Eden. Atlantis is small compared to the magnitude of this discovery when you think about it being the Garden of Eden. It doesn't get any bigger than this. And if you want a controversial dynamo, read the Urantia book.
I agree with that. It's a big book, but it's got some great things in it.
That's right.
Next up, Wild Card Line. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Hi. Yes, this is Dustin calling from Vancouver.
Sure, Dustin.
I just felt I had to call in. I had a dream about a year ago while I was in Greece.
It was a really vivid, lucid dream. It wasn't quite lucid, but it was just a very vivid dream that I just felt like I was reliving something over again. And I'll just tell you what the dream was. I was a priest, which felt like Atlantis, and I was walking out this great big long sand pier, and to go talk to this king that was standing at the very end, looking over the ocean, and there was men following me, shooting arrows into these like giant TV like torch things that would light up as I was walking underneath them, and I came to the end and was stood by this king, and I was supposed to advise him as to what we should do or something, and there was this horrible screaming and thunder and lightning coming from the distance across the ocean, and that we knew that it was time or whatever, and we had to began running back down this long, it was just like a big long sand pier that went out into this ocean, and came to this wall that looks like almost exactly like what I've seen on the internet here, and it's shocking to me because also the like I had heard the Edgar Casey version and everything. And it just didn't really seem right. Like, it didn't go to the dream, so I didn't really think the dream was real. I thought maybe it was something that it was just a dream and not, like, a past life or something. But now looking at this, you know when you're in a dream and you kind of feel the presence of everything around you, even though you can't see it exactly, you know, like, where you are. Looking at the map of this is exactly how I imagined the water. Like, it was more of a U-shape that we were running back towards, like, the land, and it wasn't just, like, it didn't feel like an island. It felt like we had land to go to. And then at the end of the dream, as I'm running towards the walls and we're climbing up these giant stairs and going, and I'm trying to find all my loved ones and everything, and we end up going into this desert, and we're walking through the desert as this water is, like, coming up to our knees, and we're just trying to get closer to the desert before we're drowned. And
how do you know it wasn't a past life?
Well, that's what I'm starting to think now that I'm looking at this.
You might have been an Atlantean.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, and it was that I was a priest in the dream, and I also have had like images. I'm an artist, and I've had images of very like Atlantean imagery and like seashells that would hang from their eyelids, which may have been, I don't know, in some sort of fashion or something back then, or has some meaning to the Atlantean culture. But yeah, it's been very interesting. And I have red hair and green eyes, and I had heard that that's where they.
I don't know about that. Red hair and green eyes, Robert. You ever hear that, Robert? Well, we've lost him again. So that's the second time the Cypriot phone company has clipped off. We should get them together with Arts Phone Company in Manila, and they could have one heck of a group together. Okay, well, I'll continue with your open line phone calls. Perhaps you can ask me a question. I, too, am an expert on Atlantis. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, this is Chris from Bloomington, Indiana.
Hey, Chris, welcome to the show.
How you doing tonight?
Good, thanks.
Okay, well, you guys have talked a lot about the Urantia book tonight, and I wanted to bring up another book that I thought was really interesting and had some really interesting things to say about Atlantis. It's The Ancient Secret of the Flower of Life by a man who calls himself Drunvalo, and as far as the last name, Mendelchek, I believe, is pretty close. Are you familiar with the work?
I am not. Let's see if we'll bring in Robert. You back with us again, Robert?
I'm back. This time I could hear you, and you couldn't hear me.
I was going to say the Cypriot phone company's got us tonight, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead again, if you want, with that question.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to, like I said, bring up it's a work in two volumes, and it's called The Ancient Secret of the Flower of Life. And in it, the author lays out some pretty interesting theories about Atlantis, and you know, he touches on the fact that there was aliens in contact with them, and he's got some theories about some walls that were specifically built that divided the island into four quadrants, and then he kind of touches on some things with the masculine and the feminine. Are you familiar with this work, Robert?
Robert? We lost him again. Darn. Well, I am not, but we'll pass it on to him, okay?
Yeah, Drunvalo would probably be an excellent guest. You should check into it, George.
Okay. Appreciate you being part of the program. Yeah, we lost him again. Just when I knocked the Cypriot phone company, they clipped him. How about that? Wildcard line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, Mr. Norrie. How are you?
Good, sir. Thank you.
Well, I had some things I wanted to mention to Robert, but I'll mention them to you.
Okay, do that. And if we get him back on again, I'll plug him right on.
Very good. The first one would be, do you know about the Gonchas?
The Gonchas? No.
Yes.
Okay, I do
so
not.
The Gonchas were on the Canary Islands, and it was the Spaniards who landed on the Canaries, and when they were able to communicate with them, they found out that, and they were blonde-haired, blue-eyed, and fair-skinned, and they did build in red, white, and black stone. And they told the Spaniards that they thought that they were the last people left on the planet, and that their island continent had sunk many years before. Another thing, too, is that in Plato's Republic, he speaks about lakes that Atlantis had. And on one side it was blue, and on the other side it was green. In other words, one side was fresh water, the other side was salt water. And sure enough, on the Canaries, there is a lake where one side is blue and one side is green. So as far as that evidence goes, it sure sounds like Atlantis was in the Atlantic. The other point I wanted to make also is that, you know, there seems to have been two catastrophes, not one. There seems to have been a catastrophe where we had the Great Flood, which apparently, according to scientists, is somewhere around 5,500 B.C. The other one would be, of course, with Velikovsky, which would be 1,500 B.C.
Right.
Now, the point is that it says that Atlantis sunk. It wasn't covered over by water, but it sunk. So anything that was in the Mediterranean when the Great Flood happened was covered over by water. And the other point I wanted to make also is that there was a controversy during the time of Solon, or at least there's a controversy now, I should say, and that is that they're not sure whether Solon meant 900 years before his present era or 9,000. But if you add 6 to 9, you get 15. And if it was in 600 B.C. and you add 900 years to that, the catastrophe would have happened in 1500 B.C. So it seems to me that Atlantis was in the Atlantic and that the Canaries seem to have been a part of Atlantis and that it was in 1500 B.C. and that, as a matter of fact, there are some writings which talk about Atlantis because I've done a lot of study on Atlantis.
Let's see if we got Robert back here. Robert, are you back?
I'm with you.
You're there. Have you been able to hear much of what he was saying when we got you back in?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Do you want to react to any of that?
Well, first of all, about the 1500 BC thing, you know, that's tied to the Santorini explosion, the island of Thera having a volcano that exploded, leaving the current island of Santorini. You know, remember that Atlantis was supposed to be where civilization originated. And this is the Egyptian high priest talking, and these were the people that had the most ancient civilization in that time and knew history better than anybody. That's why all the Greeks went there routinely to get historic records from them. Certainly, 2,600 years ago, when Solon was in Egypt, the Egyptian priest would not have thought of an explosion that happened 1,000 years before their time as something that was, you know, anything of historic merit. In other words, they certainly would not have believed that civilization began 1,000 years before their time. They're talking about distant
way
antiquity.
Back, way back. Yeah.
Way back. And also, you know, you can go back and forth with the Atlantic thing. Let me put it to you this way.
Something happened to the Atlantic, I would assume, right?
Well, I don't know. But if I tell you that an earthquake in Los Angeles sunk an island, sunk Long Island, near New York, would you believe that?
I would say, how in the heck could that happen?
Well, that's what you'd be saying if you say that an earthquake in the eastern Mediterranean sunk an island in the Atlantic.
I would have said something. I would say if there was an island in the Atlantic and it sunk, it was caused by something else.
Exactly. And you're talking about times where there were no communications. There were no, you know, you don't have anything in the Canary Islands. You don't have a landmass match. So of course, this is all conjecture. You can go back and forth forever. But in the end, you have to match what the ancient people wrote about this place. You can't just say, well, it was probably in this region. Okay, fine. Well, people have concocted these theories all over the world. But what do you have as proof? Do you have a landmass that matches this very detailed account? Do you have any, is it underwater? Do you, have you found any remains that are man-made? Do you have accounts of a flood? Another thing that, you know, rejects the Atlantic theory is that ocean waters can never rise to the degree that is spoken of. Atlantis Island was supposed to be a very mountainous island that rose sharply from the seafloor and went up to a great height. So the Egyptians said it was one of the highest mountains in the world that was on this island. So you're talking about a mountain that's at least several thousand feet high, with the cities located at the southern foothills. If you place that in the Atlantic Ocean, you say, well, most of it at least was covered by water, you'd be saying that the Atlantic Ocean rose by thousands of feet, which is impossible. Even massive tsunamis in oceans can only, you know, only raise water a few inches, and they only pick up speed and height when they reach shore. No, Atlantic Ocean has never risen that high, certainly not dramatically, and melting ice water cannot rise quickly enough to be thought of as something catastrophic. It, you know, may raise 1 inch a year. So the only place that can match this idea, this story, this legend of a very mountainous island rising thousands of feet into the air that was engulfed suddenly with, you know, associated seismic and volcanic activity is the Mediterranean basin, which science has proven was flooded by this massive torrent of water from the Atlantic.
What are the odds?
That rose thousands of feet.
Robert, what are the odds of the Mediterranean drying up again?
Well, the odds are absolutely certain. You know, the scientists say that this is going to happen again. It's this very strange geological phenomenon that occurs near the Strait of Gibraltar with this meeting point between Spain, you know, and when they meet together, when the Eurasian and the African plates collide, this Gibraltar strait becomes a dam. It's happened again, again, and again.
So it's possible again. All those structures will be seen again, at that time.
Yeah, the scientists say, you know, count on it. It's going to happen again. And once they do, once that strait becomes a dam again, the Mediterranean will start to evaporate it again. And in the space of 1,000 to 4,000 years, the water level will drop a mile or more. And, yes, it is possible that all those places that used to be above water will be above water again, but it won't be in our lifetime.
Atlantis will rise again. Maybe,
Quite possibly.
Well, Robert, we're coming up where we're almost out of time. Where do you get the book still? I know you published it a few years ago. Is it still available?
It is still available, but we just came out with the expanded edition, which has 8 pages of color images from the expedition, and it shows the sonar images. It has an expedition report by Commodore Robert Bates, who was the expedition leader, and it has a new foreword by me and a new preface by me and a new foreword by Colin Wilson, one of England's most prominent authors.
Good guy.
Who has, you know, who's come out and said that there's no doubt in his mind that we have found it. Now, this expanded edition is not available everywhere. I recommend them getting it straight from our distributor through our site, discoveryofatlantis.com. It's cheaper and immediate shipping.
We can go right to your website and get all that information?
Yeah, just go to discoveryofatlantis.com, hit about the book, and then you can purchase it right there from the distributor directly.
Great. Robert, thanks. Enlightening show.
Thank you, George.
He's in Cyprus, where their phones don't work. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.